Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, our relationships and impacts with the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us by phone is our first guest, Laura Lightbody. She is an expert on the National Flood Insurance Program. She's with the Pew Charitable Trust, and she's here to talk about a bill that is being recently introduced in Congress, titled the Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act. First of all, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with Nell and myself this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And real quick, you're calling from Washington or New York City?
Washington.
All right. And Laura is very kind to join us because she's feeling under the weather. I hope that that is cold or maybe seasonal flu related, Laura?
I hope so, too.
You hope so? We're all hoping these days. So let's do what we can. Thank you for persevering and calling in to talk about this interesting bill. Let's start with this. Just give us some background on the what's and why's of this Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act. What's that all about?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me and wanting to talk about flooding and the National Flood Insurance Program. And I think before kind of jumping into the bill, I think something that's really important to understand is that, flooding, it's the most common and costly natural disaster across the United States. It impacts all 50 states. Since 2000, it has cost the United States more than $845 billion in damage. It's something that increasingly and unfortunately we're all becoming more and more familiar with. And so Congress is tasked with figuring out how to reduce the impact, the cost, the devastation to communities. And one of those mechanisms to do that is the National Flood Insurance Program. It's the federal program that provides federally backed flood insurance to over 22,000 communities around the country. There are properties within that called repetitive loss properties. These are homes that have flooded over and over again and made multiple claims against the flood insurance program. And so there's a proposal on the table that has been introduced by Representative McAdams along with several other members. It's a bipartisan proposal that would really call on communities to kind of do what we call a flood diagnosis. So where are these problem areas that flood over and over again? And how can we reduce that impact? So think about mitigation measures that would really make the infrastructure more prepared, the homes more prepared, and overall that community sort of more resilient to future flood events.
Well, one thing I'm thinking is there a limit on the number of times you can put in a claim? So my property could flood, I put in for a claim, and then it floods again next year, and isn't there a cap on that?
That's right. There's no cap.
Wow.
There's no cap, and these properties have historically represented about 1% of flood insurance policies, but roughly about a third of the claims, which means that you have those properties, like you said, that just flood over and over again and make multiple claims against the program. Not only is that, financially irresponsible, and a real kind of burden to the federal structure and solvency of the program, but it's simply just not right for communities and homeowners to be living in areas that just flood over and over again. You have to rebuild your life every time this happens.
So give us a profile kind of the standard kind of property that you might see included in the National Flood Insurance Program. And I think part of the reason I ask that is when I think, these places are being rebuilt again and again and again, I imagine these are properties that wouldn't really be insurable by a private company for something like this. Is that right?
You know, one of the reasons that Congress created the flood insurance program back in the 60s in the first place was because the private sector wasn't really willing to write flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the federal government stepped in after a series of sort of massive flood events, similar to what we've seen recently, and said, you know, we really need to help these communities. And the sense back then was properties that, you know, flood and get destroyed, they simply won't come back.
Hmm.
That these homes will, you know, eventually kind of go away, and this won't kind of be this ongoing problem. But that has not been the case. You know, if you look back through the years since 1978 through now, these homes have added up to $17 billion in claims. You know, any home can be a home that has flooded over and over again. These are, as I said, there are 22,000 communities around the country. Every single state has properties that are called repetitive loss properties. And something that we know is that the majority of flooding actually happens in inland states.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of the big coastal events. Those are what capture the headlines and the media attention. But it's really these inland states that are impacted by reoccurring and frequent flooding.
And the sources of that are, you know, local rivers and streams. You know, what is this related to?
That's right. It's increase in precipitation, so heavy rainfall events where rivers are overwhelmed, streams are overwhelmed. You also have, you know, sea level rise and coastal surge. And then you have just kind of, you know, what the southeastern states are very familiar with, just sunny day, king tide flooding. And one of the big kind of contributors to why flooding is such a big deal is because, you know, we as a country have continued to build more valuable assets and put more people in the way of floodwaters. If it just floods in a wetland, it's not even really called a flood, right? Because no real communities impacted by that, but we have continued to put homes and assets in harm's way, leading to these increase in costs that we've seen over the years.
So just so I understand, I guess, a definition of terms too, when we talk about flooding of land, this is about structures that have to be on a parcel of land, or could I put in a claim for, you know, my 10 acres of unpopulated, woodland.
Right. We're talking about structures, and
okay.
So you know, we're mostly talking about residential, small businesses too. This is any structure that has a federally backed mortgage, that is in what is determined to be sort of a high risk flood area is required by the federal flood insurance program to carry flood insurance.
Okay. So, for example, Nell, executive director of Swanner Eco Center, she has acres and acres of land that she oversees. None of it has a structure on it. It may flood periodically. She can't put in a claim. But the homes that are abut the Swanner Eco Center, if they flood, they could put in for a claim.
That's right.
Okay.
If they have
If they have flood insurance and a federally backed mortgage. Okay. So there's the definition, a lot of definition of terms here. And so, again, now this bill, again, sponsored by both Democrats, including Ben McAdams, who's one of our Utah Democratic representatives in Congress, and another Republicans or so. It's called the Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's talk about, you know, the specifics of this act. What is it designed to change, let's say?
Sure. And you know, one thing I think to note, particularly for your local listeners, is that when you look at where a lot, you know, the states that have the bulk of these properties, these homes that have flooded over and over again, they're not in Utah. They're not, you know, you look at kind of the lowest states on the list, it's Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, New Mexico. And the states that fall to the top of that list are, you know, I think some usual suspects, Louisiana, New Jersey, Texas, New York, Florida, states that do experience both inland and coastal frequent flooding that also have a lot of properties within the flood insurance program that flood over and over again.
Right.
So this bill is really aimed at identifying those areas, those communities that have a high amount of properties that flood over and over again, and calling on communities to really carry that responsibility to tackle the problem. So there have been proposals in the past that have tried to tackle this issue from an individual level to say, okay, Nell and Chris, you live next to each other, and Nell, after your property floods multiple times, you're kicked out of the program and we're not going to offer flood insurance anymore. And while that may work from a, you know, carrot and stick perspective, it's not really getting to the root of the problem, which is a larger community-wide problem. Because if Nell's kicked out of the program, and even if Nell moves out of that house, Chris's house is still going to flood. So this really tries to tackle this from a larger community-wide perspective, put mitigation solutions on the table. So what does that community need? Does it need to enhance its stormwater management system? Is there a community of home buyers who are voluntarily raising their hand and to say, you know, we'd like to relocate? Huh. That's what FEMA calls using, you know, buying out properties that have flooded over and over again, and often restoring that land to be open green space, to be a wetland, to be a park, so that the next time it does flood, we're not impacting homes and lives.
So does this bill enable a mechanism to do that, to buy out those properties?
What this bill does is I would call it sort of the first step to that, which is putting, you know, a mitigation plan in place for that community. There are sort of financial and funding mechanisms that you could couple with this bill that provide resources through FEMA, the Department of Housing, the Small Business Administration, all provide resources to communities to do different types of mitigation, such as buyouts.
What is the... Oh, if you just join us, we're speaking with Laura Lightbody. She is with the I knew I was going to say that. Pew Charitable Trusts.
Tongue twister this morning.
Oh, yes, always. And we're talking about the bill in Congress right now called the Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act. So, Laura, what is the typical size of a claim in dollars? Do we have a sense of that? Or is this like people putting in for hundreds of thousands of dollars of claims for a piece of property or so repeatedly?
You know, there is a really large range of claims that are made against the program. Hmm. We have seen, you know, if you look sort of back and analyze some of the data from Hurricane Sandy, for example, that we're kind of all familiar with that impacted the Northeast, the sort of average claim for flood insurance was roughly somewhere between $80,000 and $90,000. Mm-hmm. And then if you look outside of the flood insurance program, so if you look at homes that do not have flood insurance program, and those people went to the federal government for support to rebuild, the average amount that they received from the federal government was only about $10,000. Hmm. And so, which is very unfortunate, but we see that a large amount of support that comes from the federal government to rebuild is actually for those who are uninsured, which is a whole another problem that we need to deal with.
Oh, right.
But but flood insurance is sort of that first line of financial defense for a home buyer, a homeowner.
Okay. So, Laura, tell us a little bit about kind of why this came up now. Is this an issue that the Pew Charitable Trust has been working on for a while? Is this something that's been considered in several sessions now? You know, what was kind of the motivation for Ben McAdams and the other group of legislators to bring this to the floor now?
Yeah, you know, the flood insurance program is about $20 billion in debt.
Right.
And it's about the second time. It's the second time that the program has been in the red this much. It is a program that is not financially stable because it pays out more than it takes in, meaning that, you know, the value of claims is much more than what it's taking in from premiums. And that's, you know, there are several contributing factors to that. One of the biggest burdens is what we're talking about today, these properties that repeatedly flood over and over again. Even the federal government has called these properties the single most important factor that affects the stability of the National Flood Insurance Program. So it is an issue that we simply have to get a handle on, and it's not a partisan issue, as exemplified by the partnership that we see within the bill. The timing, you know, that sort of brings up the urgency of why we have to tackle this problem. The other thing is these properties, they're not going away. They continue to grow year after year. There continue to be properties that flood over and over again. The flood insurance program expires in September of this year, which means that Congress has an opportunity to make improvements to that bill and also reauthorize it to make sure that there's no lapse in the flood insurance program. And so introducing this bill now, it, you know, allows Congress to consider this as a proposal in time for a September reauthorization.
Okay. I'm sorry if you might have said this previously, but who actually is running the National Flood Insurance Program? What department does that go through?
Sure. So Congress, you know, legislates it and sort of sets the rules of the road, and FEMA is the administrator of the National Flood Insurance Program.
Okay.
FEMA is also the administrator of a good portion of, you know, the federal recovery and mitigation dollars that are available to communities.
Right. Okay. So FEMA is running it. Like you say, they're $20 billion in the red on this so far. If I put in a claim for $100,000, how long does it take for me to get that claim, basically get a check?
Good question. The uncertainty of the length of how long it could take is a real problem.
Yeah.
We have seen some, you know, headlines, particularly around Hurricane Harvey, where people are still waiting for a check.
Wow.
And if you're talking about wanting to do a buyout, for example, if your home, you know, if your home flooded today, and you have raised your hand and said, you know what, I'm ready to relocate. I don't want to live in this home anymore. FEMA will provide resources to do that, but the length of time that it takes can be so long that sometimes the property owner says, you know what, never mind, right? I already started hanging up my pictures again, and we put new carpet in, and we're back in, right?
Right.
Right. That's a form of mitigation, Laura. That's saying this to me.
Yes.
Without being too flip.
Yes.
It's discouraging, you know.
It's very discouraging.
Why bother? But yet, like you say,
right.
These are properties that are getting flooded over and over again. And with climate change and rising sea levels, Now you're going to see, are you going to see more properties, more claims associated with, like you say, king tide-based flooding and just more tidal-based flooding? Is that right in play? Are those properties able to put in for claims?
Again, within the constraints of what we're talking about, if they have flood insurance, they can make a claim against the program. But, you know, the real, I think what you're really getting at is what we're trying to drive and identify is mitigation solutions for communities.
Yeah.
A lot of what we're trying to do is retrofit bad decisions that we made around land use and development and building. And that has led to more people and more costly assets in harm's way. So we have to get a handle on that existing stock by doing things like relocation, right? Elevation, building codes, restabilizing shorelines and expanding rivers. Mm-hmm. But we also have to look ahead and figure out how do we not get here? How do we not have this conversation in 40 years? And that's a real challenge that communities and states and governors and Congress are all tasked with, so that our communities are ultimately more resilient in the future. Hmm.
So does the Act, the Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act, provide resources, like financial resources, training, information? What are the resources that it's providing communities and encouraging them to take on these mitigation plans or kind of more proactive planning?
Right. So it really tries to call on the communities. So there's 22,000 communities that participate in the flood insurance program. And what that means is that you as a community have opted to do sort of the basic floodplain regulations and management that allow your community to get flood insurance through the federal government. And of that, there's about roughly 700 communities that would be captured by this bill, meaning there are communities that have 50 or more properties that have flooded it over and over again. So that's about 700 communities. So that's a lot. Hmm. And what they're being asked to do is identify their flood problems, do sort of an analysis. Where are problem areas? Where is it that these homes flood over and over again? And then Congress is tasked with identifying resources that communities can leverage to do that mitigation. So whether it's leveraging some existing resources through FEMA or HUD, or there's other legislation on the table. There's a revolving loan fund that Congress has on the table right now in front of them to consider that would provide states and communities with low interest loans to do the type of mitigation that we're talking about, buyouts, redirecting roads, wetland restoration, restoring natural buffers along waterways. Those are the types of mitigation measures that really amplify the role that nature can play that we really want to focus on and drive these mitigation dollars towards.
Yeah, I can't help but get Houston out of my mind, because that is a city, probably the largest city in the country, that is facing reoccurring flooding challenges and lots of properties that sit in flood zones. And like you say, mitigation, one part of mitigation is retreat. And I think that's a sticky issue. We've talked about this in the past. Somebody's going to have to say, you can't live here anymore, and here's a check for you to leave. Not based on them wanting to go, but based on the community asking them to go. And that's a tough conversation to have.
It is, and it takes a lot, you know, a lot of political will and buy-in for that to happen, right? Because right now it is done on a voluntary basis.
Yeah.
And it takes all levels of government. You know, we're talking right now about a congressional proposal, but the authority and sort of jurisdiction of the federal government and Congress over these local issues is very limited. And so you really do need localities and states to be have a little bit more skin in the game when it comes to making those hard decisions about where to develop, where not to develop, and where, as you said, Chris, where to say, we've got to stop this,
right?
And we have to change our behavior. And a lot of that really comes down to localities and cities to make those decisions.
All right, we've got to wrap up. Where do people go to learn more about the Repeatedly Flooded Communities Preparation Act? First of all, it's still in the House?
It's in the House. There's been a bill, the exact same bill introduced in the Senate.
Okay.
They're companion bills to each other.
Right.
So you can read more about it on Pew's website, pewtrust.org/flood.
Perfect. Laura Lightbody with the Pew Charitable Trust. Thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about this. And you know what? We may loop back with you as flood season is just beginning.
It is. It's upon us. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And stay well. Stay away. Keep your distance. And thanks again, Laura.
Thanks.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.